The meeting to order at 1:05. Today is Friday, February 23rd. Members present are Representatives Birch, Parrish, Tallarico, Rauscher, Drummond, Vice Chair John Lincoln, and myself, Andy Josephson. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Assisting us today is our Recording Secretary, Debbie Tillinghast, and our LIO Moderator, Ben Manley. Got it. I'd like to remind members to please silence their cell phones. On today's agenda, we have House Bill 267 and House Bill 305. We will be hearing public testimony and amendments on each bill and moving them if it is the will of the committee. So first, we have House Bill 267, and we'll begin with public testimony on 267, and I will reflect that we are in on public testimony at this time, which is 106. We have two people online, but because I'm likely to forget, I'll ask if there's anybody in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 267. I don't see any movement or desire, so I'm going to move to. And we have Ms. Chambers, the Deputy Director of the Department of Commerce Division of Professional Licensing, here to answer any questions. We have two callers in. The first one is Nikki Reed of the Lake and Penn Borough, location King Salmon. Nikki, can you give us your name and any affiliation? And then we would invite your testimony on House Bill 267.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Nikki Reed. I'm with the Lake and Penn Peninsula Borough. And Mrs. Susan Edwards was unable to attend today, so I will be I have a testimony to read on her behalf.
And it's on behalf of whom?
Susan Edwards. She's our finance officer.
Okay. Susan Edwards.
Yes.
All right. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, passage of HB 267 would mean additional revenue to the Lake and Peninsula Borough. The money collected would support our schools, their programs, capital projects, and as leverage for grants. In these times of shrinking revenue, sharing expenditures by the state, we and every other borough are looking to maximize local revenue sources. There are two points I would particularly like to bring to the committee's attention. First, having access to the HUD reports would help streamline all collection process and eliminate paperwork for the guides. Ensure that every hunting guide doing business within the borough was paying for the harvesting of borough resources. Secondly, is the issue of confidentiality that has been raised. Both myself and the assistant finance officer, Nikki Reed, are members of the Alaska Government Finance Officers Association, which has confidentiality clause in its code of ethics. Mrs. Reed is a licensed paralegal with all the strictures of confidentiality that comes with that certification. Our borough code that has its own confidentiality policies and the amended to HB 267, which adds state criminal penalties.
Ms. Reed,
can you speak for the integrity of our office and believe that I can speak for my AGFOA colleagues across the state. We take our responsibility seriously because it is a matter of public trust. Without that, there would be no government. Mrs. Reed would be happy to answer any of your questions.
Okay. I'm a little confused. The person speaking was whom?
Nikki Reed.
All right. And then you referred to a different person named Reed, correct?
No, it's Nikki Reed.
Okay. All right. Any questions for the testifier, Ms. Reed? All right. I don't see any. So now we will thank you for your testimony. Now we'll go to Nathan Hill. Mr. Hill.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair. This is Nathan Hill. I'm the manager for the Lincoln Peninsula Borough. I'm also a lifelong resident of the borough in the area. I'd like to express the reasons why we support the House Bill 267, allowing access by municipalities to guide activity reports. There's a few reasons. Our borough code requires professional guides, both hunting and fishing guides, to register with the borough and pay a nominal fee per person per day, use tax on professional guides, conducting guided fishing and hunting parties within the borough boundaries. The borough imposed this tax for the same reason we impose a severance tax on fish. Like commercial fisheries activities of the borough tax, this taxes both this and other commerce activities. The taxes apply to all lands. Like commercial fishing, it doesn't matter whether they are local or not. The tax is imposed on everyone. Finally, without access to these reports, the borough has no way to independently verify whether or not the activity reported are correct or not. This isn't equitable to operators who are paying the taxes and who are in compliance, nor is it fair to the folks that live out here and depend on that resource. So, again, I'd like to express, as a resident of the area and as the manager of the Lake and Peninsula Borough, my thanks for the opportunity to express the reasons why we support the passage of House Bill 267, allowing access by municipalities to guide activity reports. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Any questions for Mr. Hill? I don't see any. My handy device says that we also have Mr. Brookover of Alaska Fish and Game, Permanent Fish and Game, available for questions from Anchorage. At don't see any other folks desirous of testifying in public testimony, so I'm going to close that out at 1:15. Might be slightly earlier, 1:13. And we will now move to amendments. And so amendments that have been provided to the committee are all from, I believe, from Representative Rauscher. Do I have that right, Representative Rauscher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Chairman Joseph, and at this time I'd like to move amendment number one.
Object. Okay.
All right. Yes.
Basically, amendment number one simply limits the time in which a municipality granted access to state records, allowing it to look back in those records for 4 years. And instead of I don't even know if there's a limit in the bill. So this actually gives them only 4 years look back for this type of data.
Okay. And what I would like to do is invite Mr. Clark, who works for the sponsor, Speaker Edgman, to give us his opinion of the amendment briefly and let us know whether, what your opinion of the amendment is, obviously.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Edgman. And Representative Edgman is perfectly fine with this amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clark. Is there any other? We've heard from the mover of the amendment, the maker of the amendment. Is there any other discussion about amendment number one? Is there any, we have an objection.
I withdraw my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Drummond withdrew her objection. Is there any other objection to Amendment Number 1? Seeing and hearing none, Amendment Number 1 is adopted by the committee. And so we will now move to Amendment Number 2. Representative Rauscher, would you like to move Amendment Number 2?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Josephson. At this moment, I'd like to move Amendment Number 2.
Okay, it's moved. I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Appreciate that very much. Thank you. This amendment grants the Department of Commerce the authority to charge a fee for providing a municipality access to the records. This will help offset the additional fiscal burden of providing access to the big game guides who are being taxed locally. If you remember in our last meeting when we talked about this, that there was a possibility that there was going to be an offset of the costs actually incurred by some of the big game guides, which would get passed down to the hunters somehow. So this would actually put this back into the court of the municipalities and not to go toward that direction.
Okay. Any other discussion about the amendment? I'll invite Mr. Clark again to give us the input of the sponsor as to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once more, Tim Clark, staff to Representative Etchman. And as with Amendment Number 1, the bill sponsor is fine with this amendment as well.
Okay. I made the objection to the amendment. I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any other objection to Amendment Number 2?
I'd like to object for a second, just so I could speak.
Sure.
Thank you. To my own amendment.
Representative Rush,
I'll object, Mr. Chair.
I don't know the process. So
you want to tell us more about your amendment?
I just wanted to say that these amendments I have all, when I make an amendment, I try to go to the bill sponsor and make sure that they're happy with it before I get too involved. So I would like to just say that I did approach Mr. Clark here, and so I appreciate you all if you would support the amendment.
Okay.
I withdraw my objection.
All right. And
mine too, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So there is no present amendment, and so the record is clear. The amendment before us is J.5. We've marked it as Amendment 2, but it's really, truly J.5. There's no other, yes, discussion or objection?
No objection to this amendment.
Okay.
No. I do have an amendment to offer subsequently.
Okay, so there's no other objections to Amendment J.5, which is Amendment 2, and so that is adopted by the committee. And we now move to Amendment 3, which has no number, but Representative Parrish, is this your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move Amendment Number 3.
Object for point of discussion.
So we have Amendment 3 before us. It's been objected to. Why don't you tell us about your amendment?
I'd like to invite invite Mr. Clark to give the opinion of his office on it.
Okay. Mr. Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parrish, the bill sponsor has no objection to this amendment either. It was there is a realization that Amendment Number 2 gave authority to the Department of Commerce to institute a fee should fees sometime in the future be warranted, and we realized that the Department of Fish and Game had been left out in terms of they also being able to recoup expenses if from the municipalities for this work if it's warranted.
All right, and so I'll ask 3 and 5, rather amendments. Let me retract that. Amendments 2 and 3 are different because they refer to different departments.
Correct, and nearly every other respect, Mr. Chairman, they're identical.
Okay, all right. Any other discussion about Amendment 3? Please, Representative Rauscher.
I support the amendment. I think it's a good idea to also include them. I think the costs will have to be considered somehow, and so I think this is a pretty good amendment.
Okay. Any other objection to Amendment 3 or discussion of Amendment 3? I can't remember who made the objection.
I release my objection.
All right. The objection is withdrawn. Are there other objections to Amendment 3? Seeing and hearing none, Amendment 3 is adopted, and the record should reflect that it was an amendment made by Representative Parrish and has no drafter's number. I think Ms. Tillinghast understands that. It's a conceptual amendment. Okay, so now we have the bill as amended before us, and is there any discussion of the bill before us as amended? Yes, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Chairman Josephson. I would just like to say that, I don't really believe in a whole lot of data collecting here, but I want you to know that I do have reservations by the amount of data that will actually be collected. I do also have reservations about the time of which they can go back to 4 years, but this was a compromise, in my opinion, and I believe in compromises, and I agree with it. But I think that I've talked to the people who are probably most affected by this, and I believe they feel that it's a fairly good bill because it gives them credence, it gives them credence in their community and what they're doing in the areas. So I think that I would probably be supportive of this. So I just thought I'd mention why. Okay. Thank you. And why, the heartache that I do have, but I'm still willing to vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments about House Bill 267 as amended? I don't see any. So at this time, I would invite a motion from the Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move committee substitute for House Bill 267, version J, as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes from the House Resources Committee.
Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing and hearing none, we will take an at ease. The motion is adopted, and the bill will advance down whatever pathway it will go. We'll at ease it here at 121. Record at 125, February the 23rd. And next on the agenda is House Bill 305. We heard this before. We had some invited testimony. We had the original presentation. We need to give it an opportunity for public testimony, so I'm going to open public testimony at 126. And we have... what I see here, I'm told that there are a number of people that might be testifying, but what I see is Jennifer Curry of the Alaska Department of Law is available to answer questions from Anchorage. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify about House Bill 305? I've not received any amendments to 305. And with that, I'm going to close public testimony. I'll call it 127. Clocks aren't in perfect sync. So we now have House Bill 305 before us. As I said, I've not received any amendments. Are there questions for the department about the bill or any closing comments the department wanted to make about the bill? And we do have, I'm happy to report, Kristen Ryan online to answer any outstanding questions. Are there any further questions for either the attorney for the state, Ms. Curry, or for the director of SPAR, Ms. Ryan.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Representative Rauscher.
I think Representative Parrish was first, but good. Thank you, through the thank you, Chairman Josephson. The I just want to make sure that my understanding is that what we're doing is leaving the must-to for a fine for a homeowner's accidental spill. Is that what this is basically about?
That's Representative Rauscher, that's my understanding.
Okay.
That's the core function. I think the idea is that there are lots of costs associated with this, and that under current law there's a sort of piling on, quote unquote,
more misery.
Yeah, more misery. And also that we'll get more compliance, that is, people will sound the alarm and ask for help. Ms. Ryan, do you want to add anything more to my sophomoric comments about the bill?
Mr. Chairman, this is Director Ryan, Kristen Ryan with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Yes, you guys are understanding the bill correctly. The point is that the department is required by law to recover all our costs associated with providing assistance to a homeowner that has a spill. We would rather have them use those limited resources to clean up the spill and allow us to provide assistance, since they don't have the expertise usually to address the problem. And our help can go a long way to making it a cheaper experience for them and maybe a little bit less stressful, because it's a pretty serious event.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Ryan? Yes, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be more properly a question for our attorney, Ms. Curry. Ms. Curry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. What effect would you foresee if this bill were to be passed in terms of people having a grievance with the state? Right now, we're required to charge them. Clearly, some of them find it insult to injury, or smaller injury to injury. Do we currently experience any pushback when we attempt to collect the fines? And would you anticipate any change in this from this?
Representative Parrish, through the chair, I think that might be a better question for Ms. Ryan to answer, since cases don't come over to the department unless there's a problem.
Ms. Ryan, would you like to respond?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we find that homeowners are inhibited. They don't want to contact us because they know they'll be billed for that. And so we have many situations where homeowners in particular have avoided contacting us. We find out about their release at a later point after it's gotten much worse and perhaps impacted a neighbor's property. And we go to them and find out that had they called us sooner, we could have perhaps helped them avoid worse contamination and more expensive cleanup costs.
Follow up? Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is there going to be what is the department going to do to try to communicate this information to the public if this bill is to pass?
Representative Parrish, through the chair, we hadn't really contemplated any kind of outreach campaign. I think we have quite a bit of technical assistance information we provide on our website and at different events like homeowners association meetings, community council meetings. Whenever we go to places like that, and we just provide people guidance on home heating oil tanks so that they could prevent spills, we'll communicate that. We also can provide technical assistance, and they should call us immediately if one occurs. We say that now, but I think some of them are well aware that they're going to get billed for that and don't do it. But we'll be a little bit more clear in our communication that we are now able to provide that for free.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, we have a couple more questions. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am supportive of this. There's some reference that this may relate to fines or penalties. I think all the language I've seen relates to cost recovery relief. And I guess in distinguishing, and I would just encourage a department in distinguishing between fines and penalties versus cost recovery, that you treat everyone equitably. And here it says the individual did not willfully or negligently fail to comply with spill prevention reporting and response requirements, and the individual took immediate measures upon discovery and release and provides reasonable assistance in the cleanup. And I would just encourage you to give the same sort of latitude to anybody that encounters a problem of this nature, that it's not, a cost recovery is fine, but the spills and the penalties, when it's not done willfully, I still am troubled by. But anyway, I'm generally supportive of this and appreciate your work and with us in committee. Thank you.
And Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if somebody can maybe answer this for me. On page 2, lines 5 through 7, we have a section in the bill, and we've discussed pretty extensively homeowners. We've used that term quite a bit, and this actually describes a single-family home or a residential building with four or fewer housing units. And I'm way off here, but I'm kind of wondering, in particularly, the representative from District 40 is probably familiar with this, and the good representative from Sutton and myself, we have quite a few single-family homes and people with residential units that actually run reasonably successful commercial operations from their home. If I could get some clarity on that, I'll give you an example of an individual I know who works on boats and all summer long, and works on chainsaws and things like that all winter long. A very successful business and provides an incredibly important service to the community. But we've discussed homeowners quite a bit and everything, and I'm wondering if we have some clarity on where we cross from homeowner to commercial, because that and it probably. I mentioned my other two colleagues, it might be a little more prevalent in our areas than it would be, say, in a larger urban area. But if somebody can just, I don't want them eliminated from it if it's their primary residence, and I certainly wouldn't want to discourage them from doing that. But we do have those folks out there, and mm-hmm. if we can get some clarity on that so that we deliver a clear message, I guess, mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Ryan, the language there on line 6 and 7, how do you think the rulemaking would play out on this?
Representative Tallarico and Mr. Chairman, the language, the bill is explicitly written in a way to only provide this cost recovery exemption from homeowners. And I believe the language that the Representative Tallarico is looking at provides those restrictions. It has to be a primary residence. That can be, there's several factors that criteria that are included in the legislation. We weren't intending to exempt cost recovery from a professional or a business operation. The scenario that you describe, if the heating oil tank was used for heating the primary residence, as how the bill is written, then it would be exempt from cost recovery. If it was a heating oil tank used as a business fuel source as a primary use, then they wouldn't be exempt. So I guess we'd have to look at that specific situation. But if it's their home and they're using it to heat their home, then this would apply.
Follow up? No, Mr. I appreciate that answer. Unfortunately, the description I described to you is an attached garage that's part of the home, and it's all off of one tank. So there's just that little bit of that's actually a good answer, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. Thank you.
Rep. Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about the same section, actually. That's page 2, lines 5 through 7. My question was getting to the purpose of the piking tankage or other equipment used solely to provide space heat or electrical power generation for a single-family home or residential building with four or fewer housing units. So is there a reason why, if I had my home heated with pellets or with wood, and then my water heated with oil, when there were an oil leak, it seems like under the language as it's written now, I would not be covered. Was there any discussion around that, or do you have any thoughts?
Ms. Rupp.
Representative Parrish, through the chair, I don't think we contemplated that scenario in particular. So our goal was to provide relief to homeowners. I believe if it was heating their garage, that is, you know, would be considered, I have to work with my attorney on this, but I would assume we would consider that to be part of their primary residence, as long as it wasn't being used for commercial purposes and was just for the parking their car and storing their personal belongings. But that's, we hadn't really contemplated that scenario.
Okay. But this,
yes, Representative Lincoln.
I guess this following up to Representative Parrish's question. I think his question is about, you know, a lot of homes have a separate, you know, boiler that runs on diesel or, you know, wood pellets, or, but they also a separate water heater that could have a different fuel source such as diesel. So the way that the language is written, it seems to exclude, you know, a home that was maybe had a wood stove but a diesel fired water heater. If there is a spill from the water heater tank, that same, you know, residential purposes and important function, it seems to be excluded by this bill as written.
Representative Lincoln, to the chair, I'm not sure I would agree that it's excluded. I think it's how we would interpret the definition of home. I believe, again, if it's used, if the garage or the water tank is used for the residential purposes, that's gonna would meet the definition. But
just to follow up,
Jen Curry can provide a better answer.
So we're looking at page
follow up, Representative Lincoln. Yes,
thank you. So we're looking at page 2, line 6, which is it's not about whether it's a residence or a commercial operation, but that it's solely to provide space heat or electrical power.
And Mr. Lincoln, through the chair, I mean, yeah, that was from our experience. The spills are occurring at, you know, people have tanks, large tanks that are providing heating to their home as the primary use of diesel fuel. So that was our intent, was to provide some relief in those scenarios. I'm not aware of the nuances you guys are mentioning. Isn't something that I'm aware of happening to date. It probably has, but I don't necessarily think it would be excluded from the exemption, again, if it's related to the home and that's their primary residence, but and the fuel is being used to provide some sort of heat. I mean, heating water or heating the home to me is sort of a similar thing. So,
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. If we were to delete the word on page 2, line 6, following provide, if we were to delete the word space so that the subsection would read, the release was from piping, tankage, or other equipment used solely to provide heat or electrical power generation for a single-family home or residential building with four or fewer housing units, would that subvert the intent of the bill?
Representative Parrish, no, I don't think so. I think it's consistent with what we were intending to do.
Follow up?
Follow up, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Would it speak to the scenario that Representative Lincoln and I were talking about, where perhaps someone's got a water heater which is run off of fuel oil, and a home which is where the space heat is provided through biomass?
Representative Parrish, to the chair, yes, I think that would be more clear that those scenarios would also be exempt.
Well, thank you.
Ms. Curry, if you're still with us, would you like to weigh in on what's not yet been offered as an amendment, but what's being discussed?
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Ms. Ryan that elimination of the word space would maintain the intent of the regulations as written.
Okay. Yes, Representative Parrish.
Mr. Chair, would you be willing to entertain an amendment at this time?
Let me ask the committee, is there any objection to our taking up a conceptual amendment at this time?
I have no objection.
Say again?
No.
You have no objection. So, Representative Parrish, would you like to make a conceptual amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move conceptual amendment number 1, which would, on page 2, line 6, following the word provide, delete the word space.
And although I sort of get a sense of what you're doing, but would you like to speak briefly to it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that by adopting this conceptual amendment will accommodate homes where the space heat is provided by some source other than fuel oil, or which has a separate fuel oil or hazardous substance source to provide their, for instance, water heating.
And I guess my question, actually, I don't have a question. The term heat could be used to address either water or space heat. Is that the idea?
Yes.
Okay. Any other comments, Representative Rauscher?
Thank you, Chairman Josephson. It seems cheap, easier than spelling out heating potable water. It does both this way.
Okay. So we have before us a deletion of the single word conceptual amendment. Is there any objection to that conceptual amendment? I don't see any, so the record should reflect that that was adopted on line 6, page 2, with the removal of the word space. Any other discussion of the bill? Yes, Representative Lincoln.
I guess when I hear, again, response from the Department of Law about whether the bill as written covers small business owners who operate stores from their homes. Representative Talarico, I really appreciate you pointing that out, because there are a lot of small family-run stores and things like that in rural Alaska and in the district that I represent. I just want to be clear that they would be covered by this bill also.
Representative Lincoln, through the chair, my reading of page 2, line 6, is that the piping, tankage, or other equipment must be used solely for private purposes and not for commercial purposes.
And Ms. Curry, this is the chairman. It strikes me that given that if, for example, a spill occurs in a purely domestic context, there's generally not going to be at issue any liability or duty as to visitors to some business. That seems like a distinction with a difference to me.
Mr. Chairman, could you repeat that?
Well, just that for example, if a spill occurred at a roadhouse, there would be a different obligation as sort of a commercial enterprise to the general public. And so I take what I think is the department's point and the Department of Law's point that the intent of the bill is to help single-family residences with four or fewer housing units.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Did you entertain?
Representative Rauscher.
I believe Drummond was first. I'm
sorry. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are lots and lots and lots of single-family homes that that contain small businesses, small offices. They don't occupy maybe more than, you know, 20 or 25% of the home, but the building is certainly used as a home, as well as a location for usually a single person business. And I guess I'm taking exception to what the department says, because I think the department would have a difficult time if they're going by their rules or their interpretation, that if there was a small business contained in this building that largely provided residential housing, that they wouldn't cover the cleanup costs. So I think we need to, I think we need to be more specific.
Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Chairman Jefferson. I've been thinking about what we're discussing here, and in my district we have a plethora of different types of buildings, different types of mom and pop operations, different types of residential operations, and I have actually seen some very large buildings, almost look like warehouses where businesses are operating out, but yet they have a room or five upstairs in a loft area where they actually live on their own premises also. So I guess it's good, you're going to have to be careful how you qualify this in this description somehow, only because of that. And I don't know whether you're trying to include that type of a business in this discussion or not, but that would fall into this if you don't do it correctly.
Representative Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I'm going to ask for permission to entertain a conceptual amendment, but you know, I don't know if replacing the word solely in line six with primarily would sort of, you know, meet the standard that Representative Rauscher spoke to. I'm in total agreement with him and his that concern.
What I would like to do, Representative Lincoln, is go down the same path and see what the department's plural responses are to that idea. So let's start with Ms. Ryan. So at issue is changing the word solely to the word primarily. On line
now we're working.
Six.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to hear from the department first or the Department of Law?
I think you, Ms. Ryan, because I want to make sure. I mean, I view your bill, that is the department's bill, the administration's bill, as being designed to be what I'd call a win-win, but it is arguably generous. It's certainly not, I think it's arguably generous. And I want to see what your feelings are about expanding it so that the effect would be that a single-family home that is part of a larger improvement might be covered where there's a spill.
Mr. Chairman, we had a difficult time in when we designed the criteria where this exemption would apply to, for the same reasons the committee is struggling as well, where to draw that line. And we were pretty focused, obviously, on home ownership as the primary recipients of this relief. That said, I am comfortable with the concept that the home is that the exemption applies to a facility that is primarily a home. I mean, the examples Representative Drummond raised to me would be acceptable. Yes, there are a lot of people that, you know, do bookkeeping out of their home or something. Mm-hmm. I think what would be too far would be, you know, a commercial operation that's utilizing that fuel as part of their commercial business. There'd be a lot bigger volume, and they should be managing it in a different way than just smaller usages in a home that isn't using that fuel as part of the business operation necessarily. So I feel that the conceptual amendment proposed by Representative Lincoln would achieve that. Again, it's assuming that the fuel is in small enough quantities that the home is the main recipient or the reason that they have the fuel. The business just happens to be in the same building, but isn't necessarily increasing the usage of the fuel and driving up the volume amounts. The way I'm reading it from the department's perspective, that is how I would interpret legislation. If it were changed to primary, I would think that would cover the situations Representative Drummond raised, but not necessarily the other situations that have been discussed where the home is not the fuel usage is driven up by other activities on the property.
Okay. What I'd like to do is go ahead and now ask Ms. Curry what your opinion is of a sentence that would read, the release was from piping, tankage, or other equipment used primarily to provide heat or electrical power, et cetera.
Modifiers.
Mr. Chairman, I think that obviously the change would expand the number of households that were exempt and therefore reduced the cost recovery collection by the agency, which is a consideration. I also think that perhaps this could be accomplished also easily through a definition of what a single-family home is and a regulation, which could provide for a more comprehensive discussion of what it is to be a commercial business in a family home. But ultimately, I think the decision on whether to change it from solely to primarily is probably the agency's call.
Okay. Representative Drummond.
I need to point out that replacing the word solely in line 6 with primarily modifies the phrase that follows it, not the single family home phrase. It says primarily, you are saying it primarily to provide heat or electrical power generation, not to a home that is used primarily as a residence. I think we're having some wordsmithing issues here.
And I agree with you, Representative Drummond. Representative Rauscher.
I agree with Representative Drummond. I put the word primarily in front of residential building, and that puts the ownership to where it belongs, or the definition to where it belongs.
So I think we should have one conceptual amendment at a time. Not that it's been moved yet. Any other comments about Representative Lincoln's concept? Okay. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Parrish.
So if the proto-amendment were to be adopted, the subsection would read, the release was from piping, tankage, or other equipment used primarily to provide heat or electrical power generation for a single-family home or residential building with four or fewer housing units. That implies to me that the primary use is to provide heat or electrical power generation for the home or residential building. If there's a incidental use, if, for instance, you're also heating a garage in which a business activity is taking place, or if you're using the fuel to power equipment in the aforementioned garage, or using it to generate electricity for an arc welding project, then suddenly the power is no longer being primarily used to generate heat or electrical power for the residents. That's anyways my interpretation. There's a shift in the emphasis. If it's 51%, I guess, for heat, I would think of it as primarily for heat or power generation for the residents.
Any other comments? At this time, I'd like to give this a little bit of formality. And just the record is clear. Representative Lincoln, would you like to make a conceptual motion, since we it's pretty clear that that's what we're doing, but would you like to do that?
I guess, at least for the sake of continuing the discussion, yeah, I'll make a conceptual, a move for a conceptual amendment to striking the word solely in page 2, line 6, and replacing with the word primarily.
Okay, and I'll object just for discussion. Is there any other discussion about that? We've heard from the AG and DEC on that. Any other discussion on that?
I have a question.
Yes.
So the point, I think it was by Ms. Curie and with law, was that the department, after we do our part, can help better define some of these things through regulation. So I'm just wondering if a part of the, if its language is adequate to provide better definitions to help address some of the concerns from Representatives Rauscher and Drummond.
Through the chair, I believe that what the agency would be defining that would be helpful to the committee would be single-family home or residential building, and making sure that we consider whether and how much of a commercial business could be incorporated into a single-family home and still call it that. So I don't necessarily think that the solely is the problem. I think probably the definition of single-family home is where we would be better focused.
And Ms. Curie, this is the chairman. My strong guess is that the Alaska Code now has definitions for single-family and residential.
Mr. Chairman, it may, but we are allowed to have different definitions of those terms for different purposes.
Yeah, and Representative Lincoln, the one of the privileges, I'm putting that in quotes, is that the departments will send legislators notice of rulemaking regulations. And it's a little bit amusing because none of us typically have the time to look at them in much detail. And, of course, any member of the public can participate in that process. But it's often down the rung of the ladder a bit for legislators. Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do have some confidence, since they have the ability to put together a regulation for those considerations there. And I think one thing that maybe we should keep in mind is even in those small businesses that are home operated, primarily when it's a single family home or a residential home, that's in particularly in Alaska in the winter, that's 24 hours a day. And the business usually is not 24 hours a day. So quite honestly, the business usage is never, it's rare, even in what Representative Rauscher described. I have a few of those in my area, but it would be rare to think that most of the consumption of any of the, anything they use for heat or power generation would really be dominated by the business, more so than the living quarters. Typical situation is someone may have I'll just give you one that I'm aware of. Somebody works out of their garage. It's 480 square feet. It's attached to a 2,200 square foot home where they raise their children and spend the night and everything else. So quite honestly, it's and I don't want to use the words common sense, but common sense would drive you to the idea that this is primarily their residence, so to speak. And I think what we would see is if it was broken down either into hours or if it was broken down into space or anything else, I think we'd find that it would be fairly easy for them in the regulatory process to come up with a fairly simple definition of that. I just wanted to throw that out there,
yes.
Mr. Chairman, and I promise to keep my mouth shut the rest of the meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You don't. I'm not going to hold you to that promise, number one. I don't believe it anyway. Representative Drummond.
Just a comment. I'd like to point out that the document attached to this bill that has a graph on it with reported spills says in the lower half next to the picture of the guy standing next to a tank, currently 150 active sites would be eligible as the bill is written. So that tells me that the department has a list of 150 locations, mm-hmm. assuming they are residential locations, probably mostly single-family homes, and I would be very interested to know what they're finding in those 150 active sites in terms of how the homes are being used. I know that the Anchorage Municipal Code has a definition for single-family homes in a single, forget what the code, what the zoning designation is called, but you can't have small businesses in those homes if they generate traffic, if they have a sign outside. There are various restrictions on, and if they amass equipment outside of the home, that does not qualify as a small business use of a home that is primarily residential. And I almost think we need to allow Ledge Legal, or if it's coming from the department, to craft an amendment that defines single-family homes and not putting the word primarily in, because you're still modifying the providing heat and electrical power, not stating that the home or four or fewer housing units are used primarily for housing.
Well, I would say that the use of the term single-family home is constrained a bit by the later use of four or fewer housing units. So, I think there's something contemplated in line 6 and 7, but I mean, perhaps we could ask Miss Ryan if she could give us a sense of the 150 active sites that would be eligible now.
Mr. Chairman, those sites are primarily houses. I mean, I don't, off the top of my head, I couldn't cite how many of them have a business in them, because, frankly, we haven't really paid that much attention to it. I mean, we have, it's just been common sense up to this point. I mean, if we walk on the property and it's a commercial operation, we haven't, you know, there's trucks coming and going, it's not considered residential. If they're running an accounting service out of there, we wouldn't even know. I mean, those 100 sites from are just common sense home, primarily homes. We haven't had a real distinct definition of the term, and I'm happy to craft one in regulation, would be my preference, just so that the department has some ability to make adjustments if we don't get it exactly right. But, it's just been common sense interpretation up to this point. Those are facilities that we've gone on to, and there's a family, there's children, they have a spill, they're completely stressed out and overwhelmed, and we're trying to help them. That's the scenario that plays out that's causing so many problems. If we walk into a situation where it's a business, it's a very different relationship that we have with them, and they usually have the expertise or at least the resources to fix their problem, whereas a homeowner doesn't.
And one thing I'd add, Representative Drummond, is that although we have the prerogative, typically these bills and our code would get awfully long if we tried to define every term. So, for example, not to make this situation more problematic, but line 11 says the person took immediate measures, and one could say, well, what does that mean? And to contain the release, well, what does it mean to contain a release? And I think that between the courts, first of all, the intent of this thing is to offer a break. That's so a court would look at this and say, well, this is about offering a break to somebody. And so the homeowner would generally, the presumption would be that the break would be enjoyed. And I just wonder if it's necessary to define each of these terms, given that statutes, sometimes we see that in our bills, and sometimes we don't. Representative Lincoln.
I just want to say that I'm definitely in favor of this bill and appreciate the comments from Ms. Ryan. I think we're all on the same page here. I guess my hesitation with just kind of depending on your regulation, your definition is based on what, you know, the lady from Department of Law stated earlier, which is that, you know, you would not, that this bill doesn't allow for the case where, you know, a single family home that's running a store out of it would be eligible for it. And it just seems like the statute trumps regulation, and that's coming from the Department of Law, so it sounds like we have to adapt the statute to allow for that. I could be wrong, but that's my understanding at this point. If someone can correct me, then I'd be open to it. And I'm happy to, you know, withdraw the amendment, and, you know, if we need more time to work on this to get it right. I think it's a really good bill, and I'd like to I'd like to make sure that small business owners in the bush, who are, you know, entire villages is massively space constrained with, you know, multiple families living in the same home, and you have someone who's showing some initiative and entrepreneurial spirit and starting a little store out of their, you know, their entryway or their, you know, living room or whatever, that we're not, you know, penalizing them for stepping up and trying to earn some income for themselves and their families.
And you know, I take your point, Vice Chair Lincoln. I think I lived in Kalskag and next door to a property that was a store, and you knew it was a store because there was a little sign that said open, and the rest of it didn't identify itself as a store. On the ground floor, there was a grocery store. Above was the living quarters. But I also think that businesses have a different standard to apply because we have, for example, if I tripped and fallen in that store, I could sue them. So there's different standards. They couldn't, for example, there are lots of rules that apply to them that wouldn't apply to a single family home. They couldn't deny entry to a minority member. They couldn't, all those things, that businesses have to comply with, civil rights laws, wage and hour laws. So, I guess I just am not sure how far to take it. But I take your point. Any other discussion about these concepts? We do have a motion before us, and the question is to expand these descriptors.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Breaking my own rule, yes, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate what the Vice Chair had to say, and I think about that sole proprietor entrepreneur that's just getting started out. So I definitely have interest in the amendment. I support the amendment. If we decide to move forward, I will certainly support the amendment.
Yes, and I will too. I guess the question is, so perhaps we should put to bed the second conceptual amendment, and because we haven't done that. Is there any other objection to the amendment before us, which is line 6, changing solely to primarily?
Yes, I object.
Yeah. You object?
Mm-hmm.
And can you speak to your objection?
I have several times. It's okay. In the wrong place.
It's in the wrong place.
It's in the wrong place. Your English teacher from high school would not appreciate where you're putting the word primarily.
So where would you rather see the word primarily?
I don't think you need it, Representative Lincoln. I think it sounds like the department has a pretty good handle on what they consider a single-family home, and I guess you just got to hope that somebody who's renting one of those four mm-hmm. apartments in the four or fewer housing units doesn't have a major business going on in there, because this is generally limited to residential units. But I don't think the word solely is saying that the equipment named in the first half of the sentence is used solely to provide heat or electrical power, not primarily, solely. And we already took care of that by eliminating the word space, so that water heaters would be included. So the word primarily does not do anything for that sentence, except perhaps provide some exception to how you're providing heat or electrical power.
I would, because I believe in good writing, I would resist using the word primarily twice in one sentence, but strongly.
But it's just, if we just move it to primarily residential building?
Any other comments? Let me think about that.
No, then it doesn't. Then it doesn't help clarify single-family homes. I think it's fine without it. I think it's fine without it, without the word primarily.
Would it still be fine if we added the word primarily before residential?
All right. Do you want to make that motion? You want to withdraw your second?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think we're getting into local zoning rules, because it could be a primarily residential unit if it had four housing units in it and a store that was operated by somebody who didn't necessarily live there. Now you're getting into how a municipality or borough defines its structures, and I think if you try to define that, and instead of leaving it up to the department, then you're going to get into more trouble, because I can see a five unit building in which one has been converted to a store or an office, and that still is a residential building with four or fewer housing units. But it's also, its heating system or electrical power generation system is also providing heat or power to that office unit or store.
I mean, I will say to the committee that there was an amendment deadline, and we've accepted one conceptual amendment, and these are all perfectly interesting questions. I'm relatively new to being a chairman. I suppose one idea, and I'll just float this, is that we could deliver a letter to the Finance Committee, signed by us all or whomever, likely as many as possible, reflecting our concerns about this. And it could be in some narrative form, obviously, and it could have commentary about these issues. That's an idea. And they'd likely read it, because they don't get lots of letters like those.
Poor things.
Yes. Anyone else?
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Drummond, your earlier point about the residential building with fewer housing units, which also contains a business, even with the word sole, even without the amendment, the piping, tankage, or other equipment used to heat or supply the building with electricity would or could already be exempt under the bill as originally provided to us.
Representative Lincoln, and let me just note that one option, and the department won't like this, I wouldn't like it, and I'm not crazy about it, is we could table the bill to Monday, and I'm reminded that the Finance Committee, although they're wont to do this because they're scholars and thinkers like we are, but they like to see this sort of work done in advance. Otherwise, they think we're not doing our work. But if they were here, they'd see that we were. Any of those are options. Representative Lincoln.
I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, I would also like to see this thing move quickly, but I'd also want to get it right. And if I had a chance to work on an amendment with the department and with law, then I'd welcome that opportunity, and I apologize for not, doing this work by the deadline. But it's been a pretty intense couple of weeks for me, so I hope it's understandable.
Okay. Any other comments?
I'd like to withdraw my amendment, please.
Yeah. I'm going to recommend, because the difference between Friday and Monday is not, it has a weekend between it, and that's the difference. I'm going to recommend that we hold this bill and that we bring it up under bills previously heard. And now the question is, what opportunity would folks have between now and Monday at 1 to take this up? I would ask people to remember that this is about single-family homes and that there is a different legal standard for businesses. They have to comply with all sorts of things, from workers' comp to liability to wage and hour. The list goes on and on and on. Tax. So they're not the same, but they do merge in some ways. So at this time, what I intend to do, because I think we've given this enough time and it needs the attention of individual conversations, is to encourage that those conversations occur. And I would ask that the co-chairs receive amendments by noon on Monday so that the pace of the bill can continue and that we're not dawdling slowing anything. Not that anyone's trying to do that. Any objection to my strategy? I don't see any. So what I'm going to do then is we're going to hold House Bill 305. I encourage the department and any members of the committee, it's not likely to be me, to confer about the language in question. I want to do a little housekeeping, very briefly. Next week's schedule. Please note that we will have an evening meeting on Wednesday next week for the purposes of public testimony on House Bill 355 and House Bill 267. This is to accommodate the sponsors of the bill and the members of the public who work during the day. Additionally, the previously scheduled bill hearings on Friday have been canceled. So what does that mean? It means good news. It means that Friday, the 2nd of March, this committee will not meet, unless you love the committee and you're saddened by that. But and the only item on the agenda is bills previously heard or scheduled. Bottom line is the co-chairs don't plan to hold a meeting on Friday. Now, let me tell you about Monday's schedule. So I just told you about Wednesday night's schedule next week. Monday's schedule, we're going to have confirmation hearings on the Big Game Commercial Services board members. So there, I think there are four. We're lucky in that we don't have 44. We have four. And so you have time to look at their resumes, et cetera, and really get boned up on them. We're also going to hear House Bill 367 on Native Corporation liability for contamination. We were given a lot of background by a nonprofit about that. We also have bills previously heard. Likely that includes 305. Wednesday night is, there appears to be a typo. It's House Bill 355 and 367 that will be heard Wednesday night. Then Wednesday, so 5 days from now, we'll hear from the Alaska Minerals Commission, Mr. Miller and Mr. Jorgensen, and we'll hear House Bill 355 on fire, forest lands, crimes, and fire prevention. Bills previously heard. I talked about Wednesday night, and there's no meeting on Friday. Any questions? All right. With that, we are adjourned at 2:20.